Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Restoring the Earth podcast. It's my honor today to have Svend-Erik Eng, a Danish storyteller who lives in Scotland, in my studio, my virtual studio. Svend-Erik is working to bring the Scandinavian form of education, the Folkehøyskole, to Scotland. Today, I'm talking to him about Folkehøyskoles, the role of storytelling and his plans for one here in Scotland, and how he sees this form of education playing an important part in bringing about social transformation in response to the social and environmental crises we are facing today. So welcome, Svend-Erik.
Thank you.
To start us off, can you explain what a Folkehøyskole is and where the idea for this kind of education came from?
Yeah, I will do my best, because often when I explain this to especially people from US, from UK, and talk to them about this education form that is so free, it's the most free education form that you can find. There's no curriculum, there's no formal reason for people to be there. They're just there because they want to learn about themselves, about the world around them, and the other members of that group of people who is there on the high school at that time. Often when you talk to elder people, that was the moment of their life when they decided something really, really profound and deep, because it is half a year, 4 months, where you dive into yourself, to the world, to your fellow people in the high school, and you'll learn how to speak out for yourself, to really have a voice. People are expected to have a voice on the Folkehøyskole. It is a quite old concept. And as a storyteller, it's really inspiring to read about how the first draft of the first sort of, now it's actually written down, the thoughts of a Folkehøyskole. It was written in the foreword to the Nordic mythology in 1832. So it was Niels Frederik Severin Grundtvig who wrote a book about the Nordic mythology. He had gathered all kinds of stories, but in the foreword, he made this vision. We're going to make a academy for the people, where people meet and exchange knowledge about where they are at the moment, challenges, dreams, visions. And then we add the Nordic mythology as part of the curriculum, kind of what they not really are forced to know about, but what they are inspired to know about. So the first high schooler was very much farmers who came to the high school to exchange knowledge about farming, which was a revolution in those days. And it made the whole Andelsbevægelse, which means corporate movement, that made the foundation. The foundation for that was the people that already knew each other from high school. And it was very easy then to go together and exchange knowledge and find out solutions for, well, how to milk a cow, how to do this with the plowing and all those kinds of things. And add to that the Nordic mythology.
So how does the Nordic mythology fit into this vision of open schooling, of sharing, of learning about the self and about one's society?
Well, Grundtvig stated it like this. When you dive into the Nordic mythology, then you dive into the youth of the nation. It's like hearing a voice from a young man or woman dreaming. I mean, the dreams are for the young ones. We elderly, we will look back on our life and say, well, this was what we got out of that. And it was really, and we're clever and they can come and ask us questions. But the dreams are for the young ones. And if you dive into the Nordic mythology, it's like taking away all these written words. You actually hear the sound, the voice, the real voice of what he calls the people of Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and it's also in Finland. So it's a whole Nordic concept, these schools that he inspired very much by what is also inside. If you read the Nordic mythology and hear some of these wonderful stories, it's all about knowledge from the Alfheimer Odin's. He's always trying to get more knowledge. He wants to have more knowledge. And how he uses it? I mean, when they're sitting around and they have these ting, which is Viking thing, you know, you sit around and talk and listen. He never say a word. He never rarely speak out because he knows that they have to find out themselves. And that's very much the way that you see these schools of folkehøjskole. I have a friend, Jens Peter Messen from Denmark. He's my age, about 68, I think, or something like that. When he was young, he went to a school and one of these højskoler. And he came in and he was just young and has been in the school for 10 years, you know, where you just have to try to say what the teacher like you. I mean, when he's pleased or she's pleased, that's good. You need to please the teacher. You need to say the right things. And then this teacher in the high school was talking about something and he could see that there was something going on in Jens Petter's face. He wasn't really, he didn't agree upon what the teacher had told him. So the teacher looked at him straight in the eyes and said, Jens Peter, what do you think about this? And Jens Peter was like, you mean my opinion? What I think and my vision of this? And then he started talking and the teacher said, I don't agree with you, but it's really, really interesting. We're going to have some very much fun for the next 4 months finding out about the way that you look at the world. And Jens Peter was like, oh, because there's no real, there's no truth in the way that there's only one truth. There's a lot of trying to figure out what is actually the world and what, how do I fit into this world?
So I think that takes me along to my next question for you, which is, why does Scotland and the world need folkehøyskoler?
Well, Scotland is a beautiful place with beautiful people. You know that. You lived here. You live here and you've been walking around. And there's a humility among the people that I really, really like. And there's also, when I was first invited into a Cayley, and I was like, what's that? Cayley, what do you mean by that? And then they showed me the word. And it was like, that's not, that you write this very differently when you say, and it's a Cayley Lidstedt, not a Cayley. And that's, I went to, and I saw what was happening there. It was so beautiful. I mean, everybody is participating with what they have. And everybody is honored and respected for what they can bring into the big room. And that is very much the spirit of a folkehøyskole. So I actually think that the match there between a Scottish way of looking at each members of a community and what they can bring into a bigger group, and the enjoyment, everybody's laughing when the little boy comes in and do stuff. And another thing, you actually sing without a paper in your hand. I mean, that's amazing for a Dane. You should see these young ones, they're really working hard on it, but it's always with folkehøyskole sangbogen right in front of you, and you sing very sort of, some of it's not good. But here, it was without any like preparation or anything, you started singing the song. That's how I experienced it. Or it was like you were waiting for a chorus and then you sang with your voice. You had your voice because you're actually practicing it. So I think there's a lot of these, the way that you look at culture, songs, music, and it's still alive. That is very much the spirit of the folkehøyskole. And one day we were driving around, we were headed towards Oban, I think, with Maury Campbell, in her car, and she spoke about an article she had written somewhere, read somewhere, where there was a map of the world, and the world was then different body parts. I don't know who was the right foot or the left foot or whatever it was, but every country has like different body parts, and Scotland was the heart. Of course it was hard, because you can feel it when you go into these 350 million years old mountains and just walk around in the highlands. It is there's a spirit there that's really captures something in you. It's beautiful. I love it.
And so what will your Völkahoy school offer to Scotland, to Scottish people?
A voice. It is to find your voice in this ocean of voices, to find out what is it that I actually, as a person, as somebody who is in the Völkahoy school, what is it that I think about, what is it that I like, what I like, not what I'm told that I like, but what I actually like, and bring that voice out would be a powerful experience from the people here. Because also when you look at the history of the country, it's very much you're told to do something, you're told to, and that is definitely not the way of a Völkahoy school. In a Völkahoy school, you're inspired to say, why am I told to do that? I don't understand that. And that, I think, is very much in the line of where Scotland is right now, to find the own identity. What is it that this country can bring into the world, wherever we are still in the union with UK and Nord or EU, or but still, what is the voice of this beautiful, beautiful country and the beautiful people?
Thank you. It's a lovely vision. Can you give us more of a sense of what your plans are for this Völkahoy school at the moment? How this vision is unfolding in the world, what it might be like to somebody who enrolled in your Völkahoy school when it's open to enrollment, that sort of thing?
When I came to live here, and that's 4 or 5 years ago now, I went into the storytelling center here in Edinburgh, and I talked to Donald Smith about being a Scandinavian storyteller here in Scotland. And he said, yeah, that's fine. We that's very interesting. but we don't have like a running thing for you. But there were bits and pieces, and I do tell stories about the rune stone here in Edinburgh. And at one point I talked to him about the myth sessions, and that was to tell the story of one of the Nordic myths, and then let people sit around in the storytelling center in the library and talk about that myth for about 2 hours. And that was so inspiring. I brought with me my Nordic myth, and Donald brought with him the fairy tales and the myths of Scotland. And that interaction was really, really powerful. So last year I was doing some in real life, we were still meeting in a real room, workshops that I called master classes for some of the people, for the people that is connected to the storytelling center and have classes there. And that showed out to be very powerful, the way that I look at coaching, that you have to really find some people really like to be challenged a lot, some people like to be nursed a lot, some people like to, you know, you just have to find your way into each member of this group. And Linda Petula from Finland was very inspired by that. So we continue at work. And at one point she said, what is this dream about a high schooler that you have, Sven? And I said, yeah, this is like this. So Alice Fernbank, Sven Erking and Linda Petula is now working very hard to get the first step of the Højskole. And that is in July and August, we're doing a summer Højskole with only focus on storytelling. So the only theme for the classes is storytelling, how to tell a good story. And then we talked about how can we actually make people and ourselves understand that there's something going on here. So we invited our friends and people that is interested in the subject here to meet once a week. So every Tuesday we meet and tell a Nordic myth and have 2 hours conversation about that and build all kinds of things around it, poems and drawings and all kinds of things. And yesterday evening was Tuesday. So I was telling the story of how Odin learned the secrets of the runes. And the story is Odin was, after I had given the one eye to the Mimir's well to see and understand everything, he had drank from the source of wisdom. He was sitting, as I told you before, with the gods. They were talking and blah, blah, blah. And there was like all things going on. And Odin was just sitting at his on his big, big chair made out of stone. It's probably not really comfortable. But what he could see all over the world. And they were chatting. They were arguing. And at one point, he just drifted away. He was just going like, oh. Wow, I've seen so much of this. And then he looked, not far from where they were arguing and talking and all that. There were 3 women standing by a well, another well. That's the well of life. That's Urd. And the well of life is nurturing one of the roots of the big, 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 big tree, Ask Yggdrasil. And also these 3 goddesses were sitting, spinning the yarn of every human being, every giant, every god, everybody who's on this world was sitting spinning the yarn. And sometimes they were giving them fortune, sometimes they were giving them misfortune. And sometimes they made a cut, and that means the end of the life for that. And then they went to this, Odin was looking at it, and he saw how they took a chisel and a hammer, and then carved something into the tree. He couldn't see what it was, but he could see at the moment they walked away from the tree, this symbol just disappeared into the tree. And he was curious. He was supposed to know everything. And what was this? So he went, he got up, and everybody, all the gods stopped and looked at him. Now the Alfader is actually racing and walking away from the meeting. And he says, carry on, carry on. Of course they couldn't. They were just looking at him, going down to these 3 goddesses and ask, what is this? What are you doing with this? Well, these symbols that you carve into the tree, what are they? And the Norns were like, they didn't really greet him. They didn't say hello or anything. They just said, they are runes, Odin. Teach me the secret of the runes. No, not before you're ready. And then they turned around, and he was wondering about this for a very long time. Ready? What is that? What does it mean? And then he realized it was in Ask Yggdrasil. It has to be in that tree. That's the secret, the reveal of this mystical power. So he went to the tree, and he embraced it, and he shouted it out. Tell me the secret of the runes. There was just a big silence. But then he leaned his forehead to the bark, and then he could feel the shivering of one of these symbols just passing by from the Norns to Midgard. And then he understood. He knew what he had to do. So he walked up to Frigg, his wife, and said, wife, I have to hang in the tree until I know the secret of the runes. Please tell everybody, all the gods, not bring me anything. No water, no food. Took his spear and he climbed up that tree. He climbed and he climbed till he found the right place. There were 2 branches going out from that tree. And there, he pierced himself, the spear into his gut. And then he hanged himself. And the first day was hard. The wound hurt and there was blood coming out. It was like a big pile of black. There was like a big ocean underneath him, and he was looking down and he was screaming, tell me the secret of the runes. the second day, and the third day, that was the hardest day. Only hunger and thirst, and he just wanted to eat and the spear. But then he learned how to manage the pain, and eventually, fourth day, it was easier. The fifth day and the sixth day and the seventh day, he was like, he could win the world. He felt like this. He was so much in power. And as a Ratatouille came by, you know, the squirrel that always runs from the top to the bottom of Asgard. So he was like, why are you smiling, Odin? And Odin just, you don't know. He had stopped screaming. It was a whisper now. Tell me the secret of the realms. Tell me the secret of the realms. 7 days passed. The 8th day passed. And then he understood he had to die. The only way to know the runes is to go into that world of death, to open the gates and just walk into it. And he waited and he waited. And on the morning of the 9th day, it came to him. It was like a flash of light. And then first he knew all the forms, then he knew all the names of the runes, then he knew what to do with the runes, then he knew the power of the runes, and he understood that that was the secret of the runes. And he pulled himself up, dragged the spear out of his gut, walked to Asgard, where Frigg was waiting for him. She could see that he had accomplished what he came for. And he said, yeah, it's true. I know the secret of the runes. I know now how to carve runes into a stone and place it under the pillow of a sick woman so she can be well. I know now how to change the weather just by carving one of these runes into the tree. I know now how to send messages all around the world. I know now the secret of the runes. And Frigg just nodded at him and said, yes, I can see that. Porridge is ready.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That lovely story. So in the Völkahoi school, after a story like that is told, what would be the next thing that participants would engage in, that students would engage in?
One way to do it was to tell about the clearest picture. That's one of the ways that I always do it. What was the clearest picture for you? And they sit two and two and talk, and then talk about what impact had it on you from a personal perspective. What is it? Is there anything in your life where you're in the choices like that, and bring it out to the world? What is this story useful in not solving, but just putting light on something of the challenges that a young person face today? So that would be a conversation. Another way that we did yesterday was very much led by Alice Fernbank, was to write, stream of consciousness. You just write for 2 minutes. And then after that, talk about it two and two. And then in the big room, present it like a stream of consciousness. And that's really to sort of find a way to inspire yourself with these stories and learn about the group as well. Oh, wow. I never thought about that. That this aspect of the story, that's so exciting, because from where I am right now, I feel like this. I know that I've experienced this when I heard the story. So it's very much about open, listen, and be inspired. And in the end, you could, like after what we did yesterday for the two hours meeting we had yesterday, was that a poem. You could write a poem. You could make a drawing, a painting, something that came out of this conversation.
So who will this Völkahoi school be open to this summer? Who can come and join you and listen to myths and discuss myths and all the problems of the world? Who is this going to be open to?
And learn. It is a storytelling school as well. So there will be possibilities for coming in with a story and then get feedback. Very, very. I mean, we look at ourselves as good feedback givers, both Alice Fernbank and me. It is open for everyone. It's going to be 3 weeks, and it's going to be 3 days a week. So it's kind of quite intense and very that's the lot that will happen during those 3 weeks. And we hope to see some of the locals once. It's really would be very lovely that people here in Scotland just have that opportunity to see, oh, that could be one day when we all like meet again in the real life, meet out somewhere in this beautiful country and come into this beautiful house where people will then be for 3 weeks or maybe even 4 months, as it is in a Folkehøjskole. So there's a vision about that. But right now, it's going to be online, and it's going to be starting in late July and going on for 3 weeks. So the Sommerhøjskole is more like a taster, like this could be the real thing. And one of the things we're also going to do in the Folkehøjskole in those 3 weeks is to open up for if there are international participants, which we hope, we really hope for the world to meet in this international Folkehøjskole, is that they will experience a Cayley. That's quite important for us to just present this really, really beautiful way of meeting and exchanging culture.
And because we have listeners all over the world too, do you want to explain just a little bit more about what a Cayley is like? Because a lot of people in other parts of the world, when they hear Cayley, they think it's just Scottish dancing, but it's much more when you're here in Scotland.
It is dance. It is poetry. It is song. Very often it is song based. It is a joke. A laughter, just bring it out. And then there's a silence, because you never know what happens in a Cayley. It is not like everybody is prepared and everybody knows exactly what is happening. It's like they come in and we gather around, and the first song, maybe there has been like, well, can you start it up? Can you open the Cayley with a song? And then they sing the song and everybody is there and we sing the song and there's joy around that. But that reminds me of a story. And then there's a story that goes on for a while. I mean, the big thing about Cayleys is to hold it short, right? I mean, storytelling tends to be like 20 minutes of a story. That's not fun in a Cayley, because we need to go on to the next thing, because that reminded me of a poem I read from Robert Burns, the big national poet here in Scotland. So it's like poetry, it's dance, it's music, and it is reflections, and it's a conversation as well. At one point, the Cayley is not formal. There's nobody there to do, you know, to stand up and do whatever they do. So it's more like a conversation between friends and neighbors. And suddenly somebody stands up and say, hey, now we open the Cayley again, and we will then bring out the last piece of the children who is done something beautiful with costumes, and they bring that in. So a Cayley is, first of all, what you bring into a Cayley is worshipped. That's I think is the most powerful part of the whole Cayley, is the love of whatever brings in joy, laughter, sorrow. That was terrible. How could you do that? Whatever it is, it's welcomed.
Great. So people who are interested in coming on this taster Folkehøjskole with the Cayley element integrated as well, this fusion, cultural fusion education experience, how do they find out more? How do they get in touch?
The whole thing is very new for us. So there is a website, and it's when you open the website, it will say coming soon with more. So the whole thing is very new, but there is a website and you can find it here. I will send you the link.
Great. And it's set to start in July. So people should stay tuned, check into the website, maybe look on your own website as well for updates. I can put that link as well. I like to end these with the question of what gives you hope right now?
That there is a spirit of we need to do it. I mean, it feels like whoever is in charge, you can talk about politicians and you can talk about whoever it is, it feels like they're giving up. It's really sad to say, but it is feels like it's people like you and me. And what I saw yesterday in the Tuesday setting, this wonderful 18-year-old girl just having visions for the future. And that really inspired me, that she said, it's going to be hard, it's going to be challenging, and we're going to demand a lot from ourselves of the changes that comes ahead. But still, she had that vision. And I was so proud of that voice, that young voice saying, it is going to be hard, we know it's going to be hard, but we're going to do it. The people that is living the lives. And that's one of the things with the high school, is that you actually in that high school meet other people who's facing same challenges and inspire each other. How do we get the next step? How can we move forward?
Thank you very much, Sven-Derek Ng. It's been a true pleasure.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure. Yes. Thank you.